Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 7, 2017. The UN mission in South Sudan says its troops are being prevented from visiting Pajok, where witnesses say the South Sudan army killed at least 16 civilians.
The patrol spent the night on Wednesday outside of the town of Torret by an SBLA checkpoint after being prevented from proceeding further to Pajok. The patrol managed to advance yesterday and reached Magui. However, local authorities this morning, Friday, have again stopped peacekeepers from proceeding to Pajok.
And refugees fleeing from Pajok to Uganda say they want to be resettled where they can farm.
We appreciated the first idea of taking settling us in Palabek. But later on, when we said we have to take the decision tomorrow, we did not also object, but we only raised some concern and see if they can consider it fine. If they cannot, then we can still go.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says South Sudan army soldiers are preventing its peacekeepers from reaching Pajok. In a recorded statement sent to South Sudan in Focus, UNMISS spokesman Daniel Dickinson appealed to the government of South Sudan to respect the status of forces agreement signed by the government of South Sudan in 2011, allowing UNMISS unhindered access.
The patrol has not yet been able to reach Pajok in eastern Equatoria to assess reports of fighting, including civilian casualties between SBLA troops and the opposition. Peacekeepers were instructed by the UNMISS leadership to take an assertive posture. The patrol spent the night on Wednesday outside of the town of Torret by an SBLA checkpoint after being prevented from proceeding further to Pajok. The patrol managed to advance yesterday and reached Magui. However, local authorities this morning, Friday, have again stopped peacekeepers from proceeding to Pajok. The patrol has been instructed to remain in Magui and is continuing to negotiate access. UNMISS reiterates its calls on the government to allow the mission to access Pajok as obligated by the Status of Forces Agreement so it can fully implement its mandate.
That's UNMISS spokesperson Daniel Dickinson reading a message from the UNMISS base in Juba. UNMISS operates under Chapter 7, which sets out the UN Security Council's powers to maintain peace. Chapter 7 allows the Council to determine the existence of any threat to the peace, breach of the peace, or an act of aggression, and to take military or non-military action to restore international peace and security. The thousands of South Sudanese who fled the deadly violence in Pajok and sought refuge in the Ugandan border town of Ngomoro are pleading with UN and Ugandan authorities to settle them in areas where they can farm their land and provide for themselves instead of relying on international relief aid. Witnesses say SPLA soldiers killed at least 16 people in Pajok on Monday. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
Some 6,000 refugees fleeing violence in the South Sudanese town of Pajok have streamed across the border to Uganda's Lamu district over the past few days. Eyewitnesses say some refugees have been in Ngomoromo for 4 days. Others arrived more recently. The refugees say they do not want to be relocated to bigger existing refugee camps in Palorinya and Bidibidi, as UN officials recommend. Achaya Winnie fled with her 7 children. She says moving the refugees to a settlement camp where they must rely on relief aid will not help them in the long run. She says she wants to be settled in an area where she can farm the land and produce food to feed her children.
Without cultivation, we cannot survive. And you know this, UNHCR can only provide food for 1 to 2 years. For me, I have a big family, and I don't know how this can help. That is why I want to go to Palabek, because they say there you can cultivate.
David Ogwang is a newly arrived refugee. Ogwang says he left Pajok on Monday and spent 2 days walking to the Ugandan border. Ogwang says local authorities, representative of the refugees, and officials with the UN agencies are still negotiating over where to settle the new arrivals. He says most refugees would prefer to be settled in the Palabek area.
We appreciated the first idea of taking settling us in Palabek. But later on, when we said we have to take detention tomorrow, we did not also object, but we only raised some concerns and see if they can consider it fine. If they cannot, then we can still go. Because at this time, we are vulnerable.
Ogwang says all they want is to be settled in a fertile area and be allocated a piece of land so that they can farm and take care of their own families. He says he will return to his home village when soldiers stop raping, looting, and killing civilians in the area.
If the government says that people should go back, for me, I'm ready to go back, even now. So long as the situation that forced me to flee the place is normalized, then it's very easy. I can go back even now. But the situation where someone is still shooting a gun, because when I was still there, they're having a megaphone, moving with a megaphone, come back. And you're hearing gunshot.
Refugee Ayela Charles says he would like to have his family stay in Lamu until the situation normalizes back home. He's speaking in his native Acholi language. He says he would rather return to Pajok than be settled in a refugee settlement, but realizes that might not happen. Ayela says he heard that officials have taken the first people to Lamu and constructing more shelters for the other refugees. He says he does not feel like going anywhere apart from Lamu. A number of refugees say some of their family members are still missing. Many people scattered into the bush when the violence broke out. UNHCR officials in Uganda did not respond to emails for comment on this story. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
The UN agency confirms that spreading violence in the former eastern Equatorial state is forcing thousands of civilians to flee across the border into neighboring Uganda in search of refuge. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency expresses alarm at the ongoing deterioration of the security situation inside South Sudan. It reports more than 6,000 refugees have arrived in Uganda since April 3rd, when violence erupted in the town of Pajok in the eastern Equatoria region. As fighting spreads to other towns, the UNHCR says an average of 2,000 refugees fleeing insecurity, violence, and famine are arriving in northern Uganda every day. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balosh says newly arriving refugees who claimed their town had come under indiscriminate attack by South Sudan's armed forces recount tales of horrific abuse.
Refugees report witnessing their loved ones shot dead at a close range, many being slaughtered, others arrested, including children. Families fled in different directions. The elderly and disabled who could not run were shot dead.
Balash says many people are still hiding in the bush. He says refugees report homes and properties were looted and burned, and armed groups are preventing people from escaping by blocking main roads out of town. Balash tells VOA the Ugandan government and aid agencies are overwhelmed by the numbers arriving, and there's no sign this refugee exodus is slowing down.
Humanitarian agencies don't have enough funding to help support those who are arriving. My UNHCR colleagues are on the ground, but we are struggling to feed these people. We are struggling to provide them shelter, safe drinking water, and medical care.
Balash calls this a losing battle, as UNHCR's humanitarian appeal for South Sudan of nearly $782 million is only 11% funded. Uganda currently hosts more than 832,000 South Sudanese refugees. An estimated 192,000 have arrived this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Boma state officials say the death toll has risen from yesterday's attack on a convoy transporting internally displaced persons to Pibor. The leaders say 5 people were killed and 17 others were injured, including 3 children. Boma state officials accused armed youth from near Jonglei state of carrying out the attack. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Burma State Information Minister John Achon calls the attack on vehicles carrying IDPs a tragedy. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Bibor town, Achon says it is not first time this type of deadly violence had occurred. He is calling on the national authorities to investigate the incident and track down the killers.
The people of Burma State are part of the South Sudanese people. It's not fair for them to continue dying on the same road. If security on this road is not improved, it will be too bad. The government should intervene before things get out of hand.
More than 24 hours after the attack, dozens of the IDPs are still missing, according to Achon. He asked residents to remain calm while the government investigates the matter and expressed his condolences to the families who lost their loved ones. Achon accuses a group of militia from neighboring Jonglei State, Bor County, of carrying out the attack and alleges that the Jonglei State government armed the militia group. Achon alleges people in the Bor community have tried in the past to block any humanitarian convoy delivering food aid for Bibor so that the people of Bibor starve to death.
A few days ago, youth from Bor announced that they were going to block the road that links Juba to Bibor to prevent vehicles from transporting Burma State residents to their areas. They are following the same strategy with which they attacked Kotchar County recently. This is something planned earlier.
Jonglei Information Minister Akech Dengdit flatly denies any Jonglei government officials helped organize the attack. Speaking over the phone from Bor, Dengdit says Burma officials should contact Jubek State officials where the attack occurred to track down the perpetrators.
Why are they putting finger on something that is on their own and they are trying to blame the government of Jonglei State? How far you think our youth can come there? We have nothing like that. We have never and ever and will not arm any youth to distract delivering of services to the civilian regardless of where they come from in South Sudan.
Dengdit says he expects Burma officials to work with Jonglei officials to crack down on armed groups staging roadside attackers rather than leaving accusations at its neighbors.
And we are planning now the government of Jonglei and the government of Terkaka and the government of Jubek to make sure the security of Juba Bor Road also should be handled. Let the people stop pointing finger, but let's try to hand down the criminals that are disturbing the delivering of the public services to the citizens of this beloved country.
SPLA Deputy Spokesperson Santo Domic says the military expects civil authorities to investigate the yesterday's attack on the humanitarian convoy.
It is actually the relief, and then it was intercepted by some youth from where, I don't know. I think it is the civil authority that is supposed to be the one giving some information, but from us as military, we'll try to dig out what is it all about.
Over the past few weeks, residents from communities of the two states have leveled accusations and counter-accusations at each other over the child abduction and cattle raids. Youth from Jonglei State have accused people from Bibor of stealing thousands of cattle and abducting nearly 200 children since December. Just last week, unknown gunmen killed 6 aid workers along the Juba-Bibor road. Burma State official claim that armed youth from Jonglei are behind the killing of the humanitarians. Jonglei denied the accusation. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some residents of Awil say the government in Juba spends too much money on buying weapons and not enough on serving its people. We will have more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle a talkative person during a conversation?
You listen to whatever points they think they are putting across. The valid ones you respond to. The non-valid ones, you nod and smile.
Well, it depends what you call talkative, because you might be the quiet one, and then someone who you think is talkative may just have something to say.
When a person is very talkative, what I do is to try to set a rules to say, you say everything you want to say and you allow me to talk. If not, I'll just keep quiet.
Maybe it's either I keep listening to him or I throw a question that will be quite difficult for him to answer to make him to not to talk.
I handle a talkative person by keeping silent or just paying attention to that person.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Awil are criticizing South Sudan government for spending too much money and resources on fighting instead of providing basic services to the people. Abraham Agod has the story for VOA from Awil.
Tuesday's forum organized by a local youth group helped restore youth in South Sudan. Some participants said they felt cheated and looted by South Sudanese officials. Awil community leader Angelo Atak Akol says government officials did not only fail to deliver basic services to the citizens but looked the other way when crimes are being committed by the officials.
Services are not properly going to the community. This need to be corrected. Again, also the accountability. To me, I feel that in one system of the government or one party system government need to be corrected, because variation of the parties and competition in what is to be done is a polite way of correcting certain mistakes. Mistakes are going simply because this is my boy, this is our boy.
Kawaj Deng, another participant of the forum, says the government is generating a lot of revenue, but he believes the public money is going into the pockets of certain individuals at the expense of most citizens who are living without basic services.
A lot of money are being generated in the state and in the country of South Sudan. You cannot even see where do that money goes. While people are collecting money, a lot of sources that can produce money. But you will come to shy at the end of the day, where is the money which people collect from you? That is one of agenda allow us to come today. And we appeal to the government, in a state government and country level, to apply what's called a good governance. Because good governance links people with it is government, and it is government with the people. When there is a good governance, I think there will be no any fighting.
Awil State officials arrested 7 medical workers at the Awil State Hospital in January for allegedly diverting government drugs to their private clinics. Only one of the 7 has been tried in court. The others were freed, causing outrage among many Awil residents who say the government to hold corrupt officials accountable. Participant Dudu Talang says he is convinced that the state and local leaders use the ongoing conflict as an excuse for failing to provide services.
The citizen actually should make sure that those who are going to be elected can deliver them services. So this is where the punishment comes. The only punishment comes through ballot box.
Bulus Mwak, Help Restore Youth project manager, says his group is working to educate citizens on their basic rights and try to build peace among local communities.
So we decided to educate our people on issues relating to the peace. So we decided to at least today to bring together the governed and the governed, that is the government and the people, to sit together, discuss together.
Awil State Deputy Governor Hubert Umowood says the state is carrying out reforms to make it more difficult for officials to steal money.
Complaints that you are working to address all this by making reforms within the tax collection system. Some of these reports are being investigated because we cannot just rush into arresting people without evidence.
Mike Wekwon, a lawmaker in the Awil State Legislative Assembly, says although government officials have repeatedly been told to be transparent on the use of public funds, no officials accused of mismanaging funds have been held to account.
We and as Assembly, I'm not a police person. The questions are the police functioning well? Is the judiciary functioning well? You know, is there institutions of accountability? Are they well-funded? Are they supported? Or what is going on?
Akol Por Kodit, the National Deputy Minister of Information flatly denies the government has failed to deliver services. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in Awilo.
A new report by the Washington-based Enough Project says the European Union's immigration partnership with Sudan puts EU at risk of being complicit in human rights abuses being committed by Sudanese soldiers. The author of the report, Simon Baldo, tells Ayen Bior that the plan also supports Sudan's militia group that has a track record of human rights abuses.
The problem of migration is real, but what is of concern is that Sudan, in order to implement its obligation under this partnership, has tasked the rapid support forces, which is a very abusive militia, known for having committed a wide range of atrocities throughout Sudan wherever they were deployed. It has committed the RSF to implement this agreement, and there is concern that this is legitimizing the RSF, not only the RSF, but also the entire system of militia on which the government relies for its own survival. And the second issue is this system of militia, precisely. How it works, why did the government come up with it, and what is the cost to the Sudanese civilian population throughout the country of a government that has subcontracted armed groups out of control to oppress the Sudanese people.
So what are some of the recommendations that you have?
We are very concerned that none of the financial and technical assistance that is extended to Sudan by the European Union should contribute to the strengthening of the capacities of the rapid support forces in particular, because this will add to the level of harm they can inflict on the Sudanese people by giving them more refined means training or of access to technologies for surveillance of populations, registration of populations, and so on, like what is envisaged in the program to assist institutions involved in border management.
But what are some of the root causes of this mass migration? And is there a way to target the root causes and fix them from the ground up?
The root causes are the autocratic and abusive governments in Eritrea, in Sudan, massive poverty that is still persists in Ethiopia despite a remarkable effort of infrastructural and economic development in that country. So youth is desperate, is leaving the country in waves of humanity. Sudan always pretends that this is a problem that concerns its neighbors, that it is not a source country of migration of youth. That is a big lie, adopting collective punishment as a way of leading counterinsurgency. Sudan has destroyed entire communities, reduced their youth to desperation, and many thousands of youth, Sudanese, Eritrean, Ethiopian, are now crossing and trying to, desperately to cross into Europe at the risk of really very high probability of drowning.
Now, back to the EU action plan that you were talking about. What are some of its flaws?
There is lack of transparency. The EU should come clean, explain to the public opinion in Europe and in the targeted countries, what does the better migration management program consist of exactly. It should really not accept. It should set benchmark, human rights benchmark, to exclude any forces that have a record of committing atrocities against civilians from having any role in the implementation of our policies that is enabled by the EU.
That's Suleiman Baldo, a senior advisor to the Enough Project and author of a recent report on migrants moving through Sudan. He was speaking to Ian Bior from Washington earlier today. top Arab allies of the United States, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar have expressed strong support for last night's U.S. missile strikes on a Syrian government air base, while regional states like Iran, Iraq, and Algeria condemn the attack. Edward Irania has the story for VOA from Cairo.
Syrian state TV showed video it said was of U.S. missiles striking a government airbase, indicating that there was extensive damage to the base and warplanes stationed there. Reaction was mixed Friday in the Arab world, with applause from countries that oppose the government of President Bashar al-Assad, like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Jordan, and condemnation from regional states which support him, like Iran, Iraq, and Algeria. The Saudi news agency expressed support for the U.S. military operation against targets in Syria, calling it a courageous decision by U.S. President Donald Trump. A foreign ministry spokesman said the U.S. missile strikes were the right response to what it called the crimes of the Syrian regime against its people. Syrian TV broadcast patriotic music while its commentators condemned the U.S. strikes. The Syrian army also issued a statement calling the strikes a mistaken strategy which only helps the terrorists in addition to violating international norms. Iran's Al Alam TV reported that Foreign Ministry spokesman Bahram Qasemi strongly condemned the U.S. operation, as well as other unilateral actions taken under what it called the pretext of responding to the alleged chemical weapons attack in Khan Sheikhoun. Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, told VOA that Lebanese, Iraqi, and other Shiite Muslims condemned the strikes, but that many other Arabs were pleased by the strong message sent to the Syrian government and its allies.
The Syrian conflict has lasted too long. It has ended its 7th year. This strike sends a forceful message to the Syrian regime and their Russian supporters that finding a solution to the crisis has to be accelerated, and we cannot continue to procrastinate anymore.
Top Syrian opposition leader George Sabra expressed support for the U.S. airstrikes, but insisted the world was still waiting for the U.S. to spell out the rest of its policy toward Syria. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Mawazo by Diamond. We have been listening to Diamond with the song Mawazo. I am John Tanza in Washington. You'll have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.